Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Deepak Ramaprian, the amazingly talented and versatile, as he calls himself, Other Deepak. He is currently working on a TV series for Disney. It is based in India. It's very original, one of its kind. It follows the adventures of a girl detective in the royal court in India. Sounded really awesome. It's just been approved for a second season. The first season is going to appear on our screens this spring. So look out for that. It's called Mira, Royal Detective. I know Deepak from the spiritual scene in LA and also from meeting him at Bhakti Fest years ago. He would play violin and sing for people, and he would just stay on stage for hours and hours on end and pretty tirelessly and sleeplessly play through the night. He has performed with some very big artists such as Rihanna, India RE, The Police. He calls his perspective on life, which I loved, infinite possibility awareness. And I think this is just going to be a really interesting and fun episode for you to listen to. So enjoy. Where are you right now?
I am in Malibu, Calabasas in my music studio working on some music.
Cool. So tell me about that, because your life has changed quite a bit since the last time I met you, at least musically.
It's been evolving over the years. You know, it's I've always kind of had multiple projects going on at the same time. So I've kind of been in multiple worlds. So I think even back when you knew me, I always had a kind of a pop rock project going on in one area of my life, and then had, you know, I was involved with, I created Breath of Life Tribe, which was my offering through my culture, you know, just growing up Indian and with a lot of learning of Sanskrit and Bhagavad Gita and Vedas at a young age, you know, it was like part of my background. And then, you know, coming into Los Angeles, I met all these really cool people out here that were really into yoga that weren't Indian. I was like very, you know, flattered by that, just being Indian. I was new to that and was very, you know, taken aback by the culture of Bhakti Fest and things like that. And so I ended up being inspired and started Breath of Life Tribe to be my own version of an offering of something that could add to that community. And so I had a blast doing that and still actually am involved in that world. Just a lot less festivals I'm kind of doing these days. Udaya Live, which is in Bulgaria, and I'm doing a lot of Art of Living programs and satsangs with Sri Ravi Shankar. But, you know, over the years, just have started getting more focused on like what I need to do time wise to advance my career. And so I've narrowed down things, focusing mainly now on Robot Nature, which is my new mainstream project, which I started a few years ago. It's a pop rock electro band, kind of the vein of Coldplay and Pink Floyd, but like a modern version of that with violin and everything. And so, you know, I've got a lot of good team members and record labels and management involved with that project, as well as now I'm doing music for Disney.
Cool. I want to hear about that, but I was just going to also say, I listened to the Robot Nature, because when I listened, there were like two singles, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Right? There should be three out now.
Three now. Okay, yeah, I really liked it.
I'm working on the fourth, the next day or two to get mixing by next week.
Cool. Yeah, congratulations. I really enjoyed listening to that.
Glad you did it.
Yeah. So what are you up to doing for Disney right now?
Yeah. So for Disney, I got brought in about a year ago this is going to be interesting, because this is actually the first ever show or program in Disney actually with an Indian, like an actual Indian inspiration behind it. So, you know, they've done Aladdin, you know, which has a Persian feel. They've done Mulan. Mm-hmm. They've done so many different cultures. And now it's like, now it's time for
India.
This is
a full length movie.
This is actually not a film. It's a series.
It's a series. Okay.
It's animated, just like, you know, Aladdin and all those things. But I think these days, a lot of the culture is really moving towards more series. You know, mm-hmm. even Star Wars is doing series, and like, mm-hmm. you know, series. You know, the world of Netflix has come about, and HBO and Game of Thrones, and really people just really want to watch like a lot more than just a 2-hour movie. They want to see like 10 hours, stuff like that. So this is a series, an animated series on Disney Channel and Disney Junior. And it's an Indian-based show called Mira, Royal Detective. And so I was brought in as an orchestrator, consultant, and a music producer. So I just produced 25 songs this last year for the first season. And that's all done. And then we just wrapped in December, and now we just got signed on for season two. The articles just came out in a bunch of newspapers everywhere. It's pretty exciting. And
congratulations.
They've been gracious to put me in all the articles as you know, music producer, orchestrator, consultant, and stuff like that. So that's exciting. I'm getting a lot of good press about it. And I'm excited for season two. You know, it's
cool. So has it aired yet, or they signed
about,
on for a day?
It's about, yeah, we just got signed for season two, and the show airs spring 2020. I think they're estimating March 2020. It'll be, and I think it'll be on Disney Plus also, but for sure it'll be on Disney Junior, which is like a
interesting. That's interesting how they sign up for another season without it having been aired.
That's what I'm learning about that. Basically, Disney has their model so dialed, and they have their focus groups and everything so accurate these days with the science and research of what's going to work, what's going to do well, that they pretty much know, all right, this is going to work. We've done the focus group testing. We know that's going to work. We don't even need to have it aired. Like it's, they've got their technology so dialed.
Wow. I can believe that.
It's Disney. So I'm like,
they seem to know what they're doing. There was a few years ago, correct me if I'm wrong, a short that was done all about Indian or Hindu deities. Did you ever see that? It was in the beginning of a Disney movie. You know how they do like the shorts in the beginning of?
Yeah. That was like, I remember someone mentioning that as like a little teaser, and it was a few years ago. I don't know if I saw that or not, but I need to definitely check that out.
Yeah, it was interesting. So when you said that it was the first thing that was ever done, I was thinking about that as a short, but this is definitely a lot. So
this is like proper launch, like, you know, just like promoting it and like launching it like an Aladdin, like a Lion King, but as a series instead of a movie. Yeah,
that's so cool. And so the character Mira is female.
Yeah, she's a female, and so it's like really good for female empowerment for this kind of role. She's an underdog type character that steps into a major role as a royal detective in a palace, and so that's usually a role held by an older male of some kind of noble descent, and so. It's like a really good story, you know, and then it's like a detective story, like, you know, with all the sleuths and the cute little episodes that can happen, solving crimes and solving things.
That's so cool.
So it'll be good for the kids, but it's good for everybody. And the music's really epic. It's got that big feel. We got Zakir Hussain on double on a bunch of percussion on the main theme, and a lot of great musicians. And the show has a lot of just the top Indian A-list actors doing the voiceovers, you know, people from, you know, from Frida Pinto to Jamila Jamil, you name it. Like,
cool.
So it's going to be, it's a pretty all-star cast. It's great to be a part of.
When you're working on stuff like this for a big company, does it look different the way that you record? Like, are you still doing stuff in your own studio, or are you mainly going?
I mean, I still got my, you know, I got my whole studio here, and I'm able to pretty much do anything I need to do anywhere in the industry, you know, at this point here, I got all the goodies. So yeah, I do pretty much everything here. And then, you know, sometimes we'll go into the studio for something or the other, but pretty much for everything I'm doing, it's all done here. And then a lot of the vocals and stuff are done at Disney Studios, because I'm not actually recording those. That's where the actors come in. So that's under SAG and under a different group. And so I get sent those and then put it into the track. And then I do all the instrumentation and the orchestration and all that kind of stuff.
Neat. That sounds really fun. This is what my uncle actually did, was orchestrate music for TV shows and stuff like that. And he always did it from his house too. So.
Nice. Yep. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, being able to work from home and be on my own schedule, and, you know, that allows me to be in my practice too. You know, I wake up pretty early and I do a lot of, you know, meditation and breathing and things like that. So just to have that flexibility and just, you know, then walk into my studio and get to work is a blessing for sure.
Do you find that because you have this, you know, dimension to your life that is the spiritual practice, do you encounter a lot of people who have that in common with you?
I mean, I tend to, I think just through conversation and through, I think, a law of attraction, I end up running into all sorts of people, especially in the business. I've been, again, blessed to, you know, I've heard all these stories about LA or the music industry and all these sharks and this and that. I guess I could, you know, knock on wood, then always stumbled upon really conscious people that at least are tuned into something energetically or healing or something or the other. And it's like, usually it does pop up a lot. And even in rock and roll, even with my band Robot Nature, stuff like that, just all over the scene, I just keep finding people that are pretty tuned into some good vibes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when you're doing well, I think in anything, right? And you're having a good time, then you probably are aware of more than just you know, the physical realm.
Physical realm, exactly. The subtle realms and the you know, matter and spirit, and there's, you know, just tuning into energy and sensing vibes, things like that. You can pick that stuff up, and if you're aware and if you're awake, you can definitely sift through certain deals, maybe turn down business deals that might seem like they're the best deal ever, but it just may not feel right. You know, look back going, oh, thank God I didn't do that, you know?
Yeah. Or thank God it fell through. I think that's kind of a nice perspective to have.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But I'm still, you know, I do satsangs all the time, like even once a month at Art of Living functions at people's houses, private satsangs or the Art of Living Center. And then Breath of Life Tribe as a full band. We go to Bulgaria every year to this big yoga festival out there, and Gobindas is out there, and Jave Stringer, and a lot of us are out there every year. So I'm still holding it down over there.
I didn't realize Breath of Life Tribe was still going on. Do you guys record?
I haven't recorded in years. So again, it's Breath of Life's around as a subtle entity now. We just do those main few festivals every year, and then I pop in and do all the solo satsangs, sometimes with the guys, sometimes myself. So we're not really recording, but actually in Bulgaria, we ended up doing a live recording of something a few years ago. And I was just thinking the other day about having that mixed and put out as an update, because it was a really nice energy. And I think it could be a record, you know?
Yeah.
It's a live kirtan.
Do you, when you do satsang, are you singing and playing violin?
Singing, violin. Guitar, and yeah, just leading the chants.
Nice.
Just singing away.
That's cool. So you're in LA, you're in the LA scene.
Yeah.
People have a perspective of, you know, of what the business looks out there, which you kind of touched upon, and your experience is pretty different from a lot of people in the music industry, I would imagine.
Definitely. And also just being in LA is different just because I'm in the outskirts. I'm in the suburbs. I got mountains out my window, and I go hiking, and I'm in nature, and I go to the ocean. I just stay away. And if I need to go into town, go to business, get into a studio session, I pop in, I do my thing. And then I just come back to where there's stars in the sky at night, you know, it's not too far away in the scheme of things. It's not hard to be here and still have nature and still pop into town. It's only 20 something minutes from Santa Monica, 40 minutes from downtown LA, or sometimes less. So,
yeah.
So I love it.
Yeah, I really loved living in LA. I was glad to move when I did. Who knows if I'll be back there again. But there's so much, you know, you can kind of, it's like living on planet Earth, really. I mean, you can kind of tap into any scene you want to, because it seems like it's all there.
It's got the good, the bad, and the ugly, whatever you want. It's here, for sure.
So what has been going on kind of on more of a micro scale for you since last we spoke, which I think was over 7 years ago, maybe.
Six. Wow. Has it been that long? I guess you might be right.
I think so.
My sense of time is crazy. I mean, a lot of stuff happened. Over the years, there's been lots of gigs. I've done, you know, movie things and made music and all that kind of, you know, just music business stuff has always been continuing on. And then, you know, there's Breath of Life Tribe. And then there's, again, Robot Nature is what formed about 4 or 5 years ago in my mind as a concept, as a TV show, as a film, as a movie concept, as a story, really a sci-fi futuristic story. And then now the music's developed into a electropop project that I'm, you know, pushing pretty hard. So that's one area that's in the last 6-7 years, I guess, is all of that's formed. And now it's gotten really clear. And so that's why I'm putting my energy into just, you know, just finally taking the advice of people over the years, like, all right, you do too many things, Deepak. You know, I mean, I went to college for pre-med and pre-law, and then did math and did finance and did everything, you know, and then even in the music, I was doing 7 different projects, 7 different genres. It's like, all right, let's just do one thing and go full on with it. And then we'll go from there. So, you know,
what did you pick?
Yeah, I picked Robot Nature. And so that's what I'm pushing. And then, you know, Disney became, at this point, what you would call a quote unquote day job, which is a blessing that appeared. And now it's financing me and allowing me to have the freedom to invest in my own band and also have the time and also get the credits from Disney anyway, which is amazing. And the fun of learning and all that is only helping Robot Nature. But
that is really amazing. How did you stumble upon that?
Just years of being out here. I've done
all these different films and other gigs. And I was also acting and doing stuff like that for a minute. Did, you know, a bunch of commercials. I was on Modern Family. I did like a lot of cool gigs over the years. So just mm-hmm. through networking and meeting people, it's just conversations pretty much just led to Disney. You know, like there's some friend of a friend who knew about me and then asked me if I'd be interested in doing a project. Didn't even tell me what it was. Mm-hmm. And they sent me in, and there was, I think, 12 or 13 other people. And then we all got sent a demo of a track, and we were asked to do, you know, what we would do to take a basic, simple track that was, and then just beef it up, produce it, make it sound really big and fat with Indian elements and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, I just did it really casually one night, knocked it out and sent it and forgot about it and got back to other things I was doing. And 2 weeks later, found out I was hired to work for Disney.
Oh, wow. So when you did it, you didn't even know what the job was, you're saying?
I didn't even read it. I don't think it clicked in my head that it was actually connected to Disney or anything like that at all.
And yet you still felt inspired to put the time in, which is cool.
Yeah, because I just knew it was a good gig. And I generally, my philosophy in life, and especially in the music business, has been say yes till you have to say no. Mm-hmm. And so I just usually say, yeah, sounds good. Let's do this. You never know what's going to happen. And that's worked out many times. I mean, it led to performing with Rihanna or touring with mm-hmm. NDIRE. Lots of amazing gigs over the years have happened just by just saying yes and just walking into things and just, you know what, even if some of them are quote unquote a waste of time, they're not, because, you know, I learned from them. I still make the best out of even a gig that where there's nobody there. But saying yes also led to all the amazing ones that happened because I said yes to all of them, you know?
Mm-hmm. So tell me about performing with Rihanna.
It was the American Music Awards. It was uh-huh. the song Diamonds, and I was just playing the violin, and it was part of an ensemble, a strings ensemble, a very small one that we got to perform at an award ceremony at a big theater, and it was on TV, and it was like, it was just super fun, and she was very inspiring. The rehearsals were awesome. She was super nice. Got to meet her. And you know, she's just really a gracious person and amazingly talented and, very humble, you know, behind the scenes. And, you know, when we did the show, it was just spot on. It was like a really good group, some violas and violins and cellos. And we all just, went out and did our thing.
Oh, so it was like, she had like a mini orchestra.
Yeah. It's very small, like chamber orchestra style thing. Oh, and, okay. And I was in on that, and, it was like a really fun gig.
Oh, cool. I'm curious about NDIRE too. You want to tell us about that?
So that was more personal. That was, I was originally in Germany for an Art of Living thing, actually, at the Olympic Stadium in Berlin, and was performing out there and met an Israeli gentleman named Idan Reichel, who's like this amazing composer and singer. He's actually like one of the most famous musicians in Israel. I think people, when he mentioned his name over there, everyone knows who he is, but I think out here, no one's really heard of him, you know, too much in the West. I mean, people have that, especially if they know NDIRE, they've heard of him because they apparently co-wrote an album together, which was an open, I think it was called Open Door. They did the Open Door tour.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so I met him out there originally and was in the stadium and ended up performing with him in the Olympic Stadium in Berlin for like 60,000 people back in, I think, 2012 or 2011. Might have been 2011. It was like 8 years ago. So I was out there doing that. And then he just, I don't know, I think he liked my vibe and gave me his info and said, hey, do you know NDIRE? And I was like, well, not personally. He's like, well, I wrote an album with her and we are coming to America to tour the album. You should come, you know, come join me. I was like, all right. So, you know, I just ended up meeting them in a month later in San Diego and then met her backstage. And, you know, we started jamming a little bit backstage and kind of playing around, singing and doing some acapella and some violin, and ended up being pulled on stage last minute to do a featured solo. And that was really cool. And she announced me on stage to the audience. And it was at a sold out venue called the Anthology in mm-hmm. San Diego. It was probably like roughly, you know, 3,000 people or something like that. And then from there, we went to Santa Monica and performed here. And she actually gave me the mic and allowed me to do a featured solo singing thing as well as playing the violin during the set.
Oh, wow.
So it was like kind of a fun little couple gigs, you know, with them on the West Coast here.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fun.
Super fun.
Your life is sprinkled with many, many wonderful things.
Yeah. The adventures are
unexpected.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was 2009. I ended up stumbling into traveling with the police on their comeback tour, or maybe 2008. It might've been 2008. In fact, uh-huh. The police thing and all of them went on a comeback tour. And I was, you know, just a friend of mine was doing some work for Andy Summers on some photos, like a book that he, of all these pictures he took in the 80s in the original tour. And it turned into a big book that of like a photo gallery, and then also turned into an art gallery with all these pictures. And they were attaching this gallery to the police tour. And so I got brought on to help with that and ended up helping curate this art gallery and presenting art to all these people at all these police shows, and ended up riding around in limos, hanging out with the police, and just like total adventures. And so I ended up becoming friends with them, and especially met Sting, and now I'm really good friends with his son, Joe Sumner, I've met out in Malibu over the years, and you know, just kept friends with a lot of the people along these adventures for sure.
Yeah. What do you think when you were little, did you imagine you would be doing this sort of thing?
When I was little, I don't even know what was going on. I think when I was little, I was caught up in another dimension in my mind. I wasn't even present to this world, didn't know what was going on at all. I had like math equations and galactic and adventures, and was living in completely in my imagination probably for the first 16 years of my life. Don't have any really memories of this real world at all, to be honest. Uh-huh. You know, I barely any memories. I remember like people say that I was crazy in school and sat in the back of the room making weird noises and my eyes were bugging out and I was looking around the room. So I don't think I was really here, to be honest. And I think it was probably when I was 17 when I got to college and started meeting people and getting into social connections that I started being here on Earth. But until then, I was definitely not here whatsoever.
Wow. So what do you think allowed you to stay so, I mean, because in my interpretation, that would be like you were just very connected to Source for the first 17 years. So do you think that was just part of your makeup, or did you have an environment that fostered that?
I'd say a combination of both for sure. I mean, you know, in terms of my family, we come from a deep Brahmin lineage from India of the Vishwamitra dynasty, which is from the Ramayana, the stories of Rama. And so my father's father going up is, you know, direct descendant of this sage from the Ramayana stories. Uh-huh. And so growing up, I think, with a lot of Indian classical music and chanting and learning math from age 3 before even like normal speech, it was just being drilled into me with this Indian culture, very like intelligent Brahmin Indian culture. I think, and then starting violin very young, and then just all that, I think kind of fostered, it was a combination of certainly the environment, but also there's, you know, something to be said about genetics and also destiny. So it's hard to know what combination or percentage of what it is, but it led to definitely, you know, doing a lot of things, you know, playing tennis and doing music and sports and math and just kind of doing a little bit of everything for years, you know?
Yeah. So did you feel obligated to do something like medicine or law, or was that something that you wanted to do in your heart?
I think a little bit of both. I think part of it was just growing up and, you know, parents talking about other family members and cousins and just sort of that motivation that injected by them. So I felt like at the time it felt like my choice. Uh-huh. But I think that choice was maybe subconsciously or consciously drilled in by the parents to just, you know, just to be successful, to be well off, have security, do big things, you know. My dad's a NASA guy, you know, he's been doing NASA, he's a top level NASA guy for like 40 years. And, you know, my mom was in computer science and working with the FAA, you know, so many different things. Yeah. And then I have cousin family members that are lawyers and doctors and engineers and just like super smart Indian people that get perfect scores on their SATs. So I was kind of pushed in that direction. Uh-huh. But I think when I was in middle school and high school, people said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I just said, a neurosurgeon. Now, looking back, I was wondering why I said that. I think I remember asking someone which doctor makes the most money. It's just sounds so silly looking back. I'm like, I think that's, someone said neurosurgeons and anesthesiologists, and I just like the brains. So I said, all right, I want to be a neurosurgeon. So I don't think I really wanted to. I think it was just, you know, just picking something just to pick something. Yeah. And so, you know, I feel like that's actually worked anyway, even if I'd rather choose than be in limbo anyway. So I think I just was choosing at a young age and then seeing if I liked it. And if I didn't, then I'd choose the next thing. And that's kind of like the steps that led to where we are now. I mean, in college, I did pre-med and pre-law, and in the process also fell in love with music then. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was going to do music really as a lifetime until I was probably like, you know, mid to late. I don't even know if I even knew during college. I was just doing music the whole time and loving it and singing in a cappella groups and had a band and was performing at the school and touring all over the country with this a cappella group. and stuff, and just fell in love with that life of touring and performing and the crowds and the energy of like making people happy and seeing the smiles and the claps. And it just kind of felt like a fueling energy. And so by the time college was over, I still didn't know what I was going to do. I ended up going into finance for about a year right after college and getting into series and licenses, you know, getting licensed in stocks and bonds and life insurance and financial planning and all this stuff. And it was, you know, I was good at it just because of the Indian math and all that kind of background. But I think something in my heart now was calling for art. And I was making music during that. And then I had some friends in LA that were had already left college like before me because they just decided to come out and do the acting and stuff like that. And they were checking in with me like, dude, you got to get out here to LA. It's amazing. And we
this
can
is
do all
where?
These.
Where were you?
So I was in, I grew up in Maryland on the East Coast.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I was in Maryland my whole life and went to college there, University of Maryland and all that. And so I had a couple best friends that were now had, you know, while I was doing this finance thing, we all graduated at the same time. They just came out to LA right away. Uh-huh. And scoped out the scene. And I'd never really, I mean, I've been here when I was young, but I didn't know anything about it. So I ended up visiting one time a friend just to check it out. And I just fell in love. Fell in love. He was doing all these things, telling me about acting and doing, you know, getting into SAG and the union and getting all this work and catering on the sets and being on set and meeting people. And I was like, dude, I could totally do that. So I just dropped everything at one point and just literally didn't even say anything. I just like hardcore just stopped everything I was doing on the East Coast, grabbed my instruments and my guitars, my violin, my piano, my computers, and just packed the car and drove across country with, you know, nothing specific to do, not even much money. Just came out here, stayed at a friend's place for a week and found an apartment, moved in and got to work, got right to it.
And so when was that about?
It was a while ago. Yeah. It's a bit of a blur, but yeah.
That was a few years before I met you.
Yeah, exactly. It was definitely before that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
And then I came out and just got right to it, just like hustling, just like get on Craigslist and finding gigs, and got into acting right away. Got some music gigs. Was in Capitol Records on the stairs playing violin and beatboxing and singing on the stairs, getting kicked off by security every day until some guy like kind of saw me and it's like, hey, I don't know what's going on, but you got me curious. And I'm like, yeah, I'm from the East Coast, and I made this demo, my acapella music called Deep Acapella, because my name is Deepak and it's acapella, deep acapella.
I got it.
Like layering my voice and beatboxing and stuff. I had the violin. I was like, all right, I'm just out here trying to like just out here to make it, you know. And ended up going upstairs and getting my first gig, you know, doing some stuff for Virgin Records, playing violin and singing on a track for this band and getting paid, and just little by little just led to more and more gigs, and then became self-sustained and built, and you know, got some pretty major gigs, you know, making enough money to buy an entire studio, and now we're here. Now we got our studio and we're rocking.
That's awesome. So who do you include in that?
In what?
Oh, when you say we.
Oh, me is we.
Me is we. Okay, awesome.
Yeah, all the me's and the we's inside of Deepak, the other Deepak, the Robot Nature Deepak, the Breath of Life Deepak, the Bold Deepak, India Jackson, all these projects, they're all extensions of myself. Mm-hmm. So it's like just it. The we. The proverbial,
you know,
we.
Yes, yes. No, and it's fitting, because when you were telling me about your lineage, I was thinking what a great thing to have up your sleeve, because you basically have this built-in belief system of your own royalty, right? You have this like,
yeah.
I mean, great. You know, you feel like worthy.
Feeling empowered for sure. And feeling connected, and definitely feeling grateful. I mean, there's a big humility in the Brahmin culture of just recognizing how divine everything is beyond our human existence, and just constantly being in gratitude, constantly being in prayer, I think sort of just keeps the canvas clean for allowing magic to occur.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Did your transition from, you know, more traditional work, I guess, to the music, did that spark any sort of tension in your life with your family or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say tension. I would say there was definitely question and concern from the parents is kind of like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? How are you going to make money? How's this going to, you know, what is this? It was unfamiliar. I would say that when, even when I was doing the finance thing, that wasn't really a day. It wasn't a regular thing. It was still kind of a freelance wild. So in a way, like even my first job doing that was still not like a 9-to-5 of any kind. It was still working for myself, figuring out stuff. So it was kind of already in an entrepreneurial type of energy, which already is quote unquote unstable, according to like an average person who's going to have a regular job and go, right. We're going to get this money. We're going to have the security. Like I wasn't even working that type of thing. I was working on commissions and, you know, I got to hustle to make it. So I was kind of wired for that already. And I was the guy in school, you know, in middle school, who, like one of the few things I do remember is just, even I was in weird galactic land, I was still like taking my parents' allowance and flipping it. And I would go to the, I'll get $10 and I would go to the wholesale place with my parents and buy the big things of like multi-packs of chips for $10 and, or candies or whatever, and put them on my backpack. And then I had a store on the school bus and I would just take that. I would just sell stuff to all the other kids who would spend their allowance and give it to me. And I would just make like $50 in a week. So I was already wired for business as a young kid. And so I've kind of like just always been good at that. Like, so coming out here to LA, it wasn't hard to just figure out how to make money and do well, you know?
That's hilarious. Yeah. That reminds me of the, I don't know if it was a chapter in that book or not, but it totally reminds me of that Rich Dad, Poor Dad book.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
About taking the money and making, like never using the money you get, but always using it to make more money.
Well, that's the reinvesting. And so even now when I get cash from Disney, I'm not thinking, oh, great, I can go buy a bunch of fun things and go out and have fun. I'm thinking, all right, now I get to reinvest in Robot Nature to flip that.
Uh-huh.
You know? That's the mindset, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, really smart. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely got big goals and empire type mentality. So I figured, you know, got to do the right actions to fall into that. And a lot of my goals really are altruistic in the sense of like, you know, I have visions of building hospitals and schools and then inspiring and educating people to think like this, you know, which mm-hmm. is basically, you know, just having this infinite possibility awareness, having this gratitude, having this no limits mentality, and just rewriting the stories in our minds that we tell ourselves that limit us from being able to do things. And then like just understanding how actually more, you know, like everyone's like, oh, that's really hard to do that. I'm like, well, it's hard because that statement you're saying right now makes now it's hard because you said that. And if you just really just say, just watch yourself doing that, even that, you can keep reversing it back over and over again. And all of a sudden you unlock something and all of a sudden you try the same thing that you thought was hard and you can suddenly do it. And I've seen that happen to myself so many times and seen it. I've taught a lot of kids over the years. I've spent a lot of time teaching. I love teaching and it's a good practice for me. And I'm just developing curriculums that I want to expand over time. So part of the big goals of building all this Robot Nature, this and that, is to get to another state of, you know, doing these breathing workshops and conversational, transformational language training and affirmations and just mm-hmm. building these all over the world, you know?
How many of these conversations do you find yourself having with people, or like what sorts of people are you having these conversations with?
I feel like this is the only conversation I have every day, all day.
Okay.
This is the conversation.
How does it come up? Do you just sort of sense that somebody wants to be having this conversation? Do they ask you like,
I don't poke ever. Usually if it's invited, it's invited. But I think people, it just always naturally just evolves somehow into a conversation, because, you know, I think we're going through our daily lives and mm-hmm. we all have our struggles. We all might have a challenge. And then my reflex is when I hear something, I offer a new perspective in that moment. And then they, you know, may or may not be interested, but generally are, and go, hey, that's a cool way of putting it. And then it just opens up just bigger, more general, because it'll be about a specific focus. Like, oh, it was really hard for me to do this song, or it might be mm-hmm. hard for me to take this class in school. You know, we have friends that are doing all sorts of different things, or starting a business. You know, I might be able to help someone with, you know, how to think about their business. But it usually comes up on the specific, but then it turns into a general, because the general application, like we talked about, is like just like lifting the lid of the mind of limits. And if you can apply mm-hmm. it to anything, you can play sports, you can write books, you can do art, you can do anything you want. So
yeah, awesome. So you're a little bit musician, a little bit life coach.
I guess I don't really like to say life coach because there's too many quote unquote life coaches.
I know.
In LA. I'm just focusing on just sharing whatever comes to my mind and just being an artist, you know, and if that happens to involve inspiring other people along the way, then cool. I like to also listen and be inspired as well. So whatever, I'm just kind of going with the flow. But I do envision myself as part of the career, like in a stadium in Madison Square, pacing around with a microphone on some Tony Robbins vibe, like just saying crazy stuff, but then all of a sudden breaking into like a like in the middle of nowhere and just like saying stuff and then singing a song and just being so in the moment and not knowing, you know, anything. Just, I don't know, just going with the flow and seeing what happens.
Yeah. It does seem like that is what he's doing. He doesn't have the musical background though. But.
Yeah. And I just use his name because I always hear him, and I've listened to a little bit. I just think of his name as when I think of like, you know, the whole transformational or life coaching or just trying to inspire yeah. people. He's one of the trademark names that come to mind. So I don't know much about his structures or how he is. I've heard he's awesome, and I've heard his voice on YouTube a couple times, and he's got a cool vibe. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
He seems like a really nice dude.
I didn't know much about him until I watched his documentary actually, and then I haven't. Yeah. I haven't really read any of his books or anything like that, but I appreciated his message and how unscripted he is. I would consider him like channeling, you know.
Yeah, that, exactly. That's something to relate to for sure. I'm glad you said that. That's good to know that he's staying in the moment like that. And so yeah, I envision that just like this conversation right now. We're just kind of going where we got to go.
Right.
And I feel like
that's
how everything is, you know. The same thing with even songwriting, you know, like, or anything, you know, music, just kind of being in the flow or being on stage jamming and just really listening and, you know, seeing what is being called for. You know, if it's time to play something, play it. But if it's time to also not play something, just be quiet. And there's something beautiful about that silence too in music.
Yeah.
You know, and that, so, well, you know, just tuning into that, not overplaying, not underplaying, just playing the right thing. If it's time to do a solo, do a solo. So same thing with speaking. You know, it kind of has the same thing. Conversations have the same thing, you know?
Yeah, totally. This is exactly why I wanted to do this podcast, because I love having conversations just like this, you know, with musicians and creative people, because they're fun. And, you know, you'll be like backstage at Bhakti Fest, for example, or I was backstage at Satnam Fest, and I was noticing I was having all these great conversations with people, but people in the audience, you know, people who aren't backstage, they're not hearing these amazing conversations. And instead they're hearing more like, you know, I don't want to call it pedantic, but like, you know, the explanations of the mantras or the, you know, which is you know, it's nice to know too, but I just thought people would be interested to know what these people are like, you know,
totally. Yeah. Just
what it's like to have a conversation.
Yeah. Meet the personalities, get to know the insides of everything. Yeah. It's good. It's good.
Yeah, for sure. And then I was actually going to do a totally different podcast, but I've been working with this man who channels, and he was like, you should interview other musicians. And I'm like, well, that's absurd. Who am I to do that? And then, you know, and then I thought about it all day, and I was like, well, that's absurd. Of course I should do this. So it's funny. It's funny. I never envisioned myself doing a podcast, as I'm sure, in my days as I was a dreamy child too. So that's why I was asking you about that. But I think that my path was more to, have that kind of beaten out of me so that I could rediscover it.
Sure.
Because I did not stay in that for 17 years.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's anyone can do about it. I think it was labeled all sorts of things, you know, people, you know, autism and ADHD and all the things you could possibly name. I mean, I was just having fun being a little bit in the imagination and, you know, making noise in the back of the room. But I didn't know I was making noise. I didn't know I was interrupting the class. I didn't know that my beep, boop, 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 and like banging on the desk. I didn't know that that was a thing.
Yeah,
because I wasn't aware of the normal social constructs for so long.
Right.
And so little by little, you know, there was some bullying along the way in middle school, I think, that would kind of like, you know, shake me up for a second. And even then I would just go back inside again and wouldn't even realize I was being bullied. I was, you know, being slammed against the lockers and people were, and I would just like be laughing and like going boop. And I think the bullies were confused. They're like, we don't know what to do with this guy. He's not like getting angry, he's not really responding too much, he's kind of giggling and being weird, and I don't even know if he's present to what we're doing to him, so they just left me alone eventually.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, so it was just weird. I look back, I'm like, that was kind of funny. You know, it's like, I remember a little bit of the guy grabbing my shirt and throwing me against the lockers and me just like not even responding, and just whatever planet I was on or whatever movie I was watching in my head was more interesting than whatever that was. So,
wow. It's so amazing when you think about how many different perspectives there are, like how many different lives people are living. I mean, cause
yeah,
you know, your childhood experience totally different from other people's, and
totally.
Yeah. I have a person in my life now who has autism, and it's so fun to watch her and try to imagine what it's like to be inside her head. Cause she does, you know, like the things you were describing, you know, just like some noise just wants to pop out of her, and it does, you know,
yeah.
It doesn't matter where we are.
There was no filter, no limit. Yeah. It did not matter where we were.
Yeah.
Family gatherings, events.
Yeah.
I was just like the weird kid, you know, and, you know, just, you know, jumping around, and like, you know, we would go to a summer camp event, and I would like jump over the cars. I was just like, oh, this is fun. You know, just like jump on the car, jump over the car, and like, you're not supposed to get on the car. And I didn't hear anyone telling me that. I'll just do it again. You know, it's like a wild cat, like trying to can't train a wild cat. But yeah, I think little by little, high school was the evolution of like starting to think about the idea of fitting in. Mm-hmm. And being quote unquote being cool growing up in America. I was an only child, so I didn't have any siblings or anyone to, you know, my parents from India, very foreign, so they weren't necessarily related to the culture here. So it kind of felt alone a lot of ways, but I had enough adventures in my head to keep me going. And, you know, I would be in my room, locked in my room for 10 hours straight, making up games in my room. Like I would throw things into baskets and then try to move the basket further and get better at throwing things into the basket. Or I would make an obstacle course out of pillows and just kind of just create, like full on creating entire worlds and amusement parks within my room, and just like doing all sorts of somersaults and flips and then jumping over the next thing. I was just like by myself doing that, like not looking just like crazy. So, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I look back, I'm like, that's awesome. I gained a lot of really weird, like quirky skills over the years from my hand-eye coordination really got really like pretty amazing by, you know, like aiming for this thing. And like, you know, I look back, I'm like, oh, that's why I can now play tennis in certain games. You know, like, you know, if I'm in the kitchen and something's falling, like I won't even look in my subconscious. I'll catch the knife like before it even hits the ground all the time. Like I just, I'm like, I don't drop stuff. Like a glass is falling and I literally will just ninja catch it without even knowing it. And it's like,
yeah,
I think it was just from childhood reflex building building ninja skills without even knowing it, you know?
Well, and when you're living your life in this, you know, following your inspirations is what I would call it.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily know why you're doing these things,
right.
But along the way you're like, oh, that's why I need to do that. And, you know, totally. If I hadn't done that, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't know how to do this
Right. Exactly.
That's why I was in this dead end job for 2 years. Cause I needed that skill for this moment now, you know?
That's it. And that's why I look at college. Cause people were like, well, if you had left college earlier, what would you, cause like people ask me about music career, and a lot of people in music, you know, they get out here when they're 17 or 18, they don't even go to college. And I look back and I'm like, well, what did college do for me? Well, I didn't use my degree. I didn't do this and didn't do that. But no, it was a lot of social building and connecting with people, connecting with humans, touring, doing the acapella group really opened things up. And also just the skills of completing things. That's a muscle that a lot of people don't have, is finishing things. And I know a lot of friends of mine are amazing musicians, and they're like trying to finish a song and it takes a really long time, or they don't finish or they get stuck. And like, I think the idea of finishing school, finishing tests, finishing that built a muscle that I can apply to finishing songs, finishing productions, finishing business, you know? So sort of train the real life skills going to college that aren't tangible to the actual degrees, but to the actual muscles that were built in building, you know, business skills and, you know, completion skills and mental, you know, work ethic, all that kind of stuff is what college really built for me. So I look back, I'm like, of course it helped me, you know, like this is where I'm able to be successful as a musician in a town where most people end up getting jobs at restaurants, you know, to pay the bills, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a fun journey. And I'm sure there's a lot more.
So much more. I mean, you know, at this point now, I'm writing the novel, and then going to adapt that to the Robot Nature sci-fi novel.
The Robot Nature novel. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Because so I was going to ask you after all this, I was going to say, are you writing an autobiography?
Well, that's going to come eventually too. I'm right. You know, eventually I'm going to do that later. I have plans to do that along with a bunch of other, there's like four or five other book concepts I have written outlines for. Uh-huh. And then I'm just focusing on that one lesson of like, all right, focus, stay on the line right now, which is the robot nature line. Cool. And so I'm writing along that line, which involves basically adapting a Star Wars type entity with, you know, animated series, live action series, which is TV related, feature films, action figures, video games, apps, and all that stuff under the robot nature concept, which has already been written in my head for many years. And so I'm just meeting the, you know, and again, as the universe does, I'm meeting the right people along the way. I was just in Maui with, you know, one of the heads of HBO, and, you know, he was the guy that brought Game of Thrones to life. They're meeting so many cool people on the way that may or may not be a part of that journey as it goes, you know. You know, I met the writer, you know, now close with the writer and director of Walk the Line and Logan and Wolverine, all those same movies. And he just did Ford versus Ferrari and a bunch of other films. And he's like a close friend now. I'm like, all right, that's like literally the guy that created all of those. And so that could be a guy that gets involved with Robot Nature at some point, you know, like little by little.
Yeah.
These are all just little markers along the way. So I'm just gotta do the work, really. Just gotta do the work.
So the Robot Nature, you were talking, so there's the story part, which is what you're writing. And then you're saying that this is going to branch out into all these different things that you mentioned.
Exactly. So that's all one piece that'll lead to a series Bible and all the, treatments for the films, stuff for the series, and then concepts for the video games and all that, action figures. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a future based story set near 2832, and there's different planets involved and lots of characters, and kind of want to keep the rest of that on the DL till I get most of it done. But yeah, that's kind of a little taste of that. And then that'll of course cross pollinate with the music, because the music's on one side and that's on the other, but they'll keep feeding each other, you know, like, and there'll probably be songs that are now inspired by that story that'll become part of the band songs. And there could be a pop rock opera in the making too. That's, you know, got a storyline to it. That could be a musical at some point, you know, there's all sorts of things that can happen from this, you know?
So the band is part of the story?
Not directly yet. You know, the band is a part of the brand in general. The story itself is set and it has its own thing going on. And the band is existing within that. And it may, I don't know if the band will like fit in the actual story, literally like the band's in the future or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think the band itself represents the sound of the project, and and there's songs that could be related to the story. I think the band itself may not necessarily be directly characters at all from the story. It'll just be a representation of it. It could be a way of presenting it. It could be something where we play a bunch of songs and the songs tell some of the story. And there's visuals in the background on a big screen with amazing like visual effects and lights and stuff. And people watch this animated, you know, or live action thing that happens while we perform for 2 hours or do two sets, like two acts, like a musical or play, and we're just up there playing the music, you know.
I have no idea why I'm mentioning this right now, but what just came to my mind was, were you there at the Bhakti Fest where they brought the 360 dome and they projected this whole children's story with music on it?
I don't know. I don't think I was.
Okay, so you lay down and it's like looking at the stars at night where you see, you know, like all around. So instead of looking at a screen where it's flat, it's like you're inside of it.
It's immersive. It's called an immersive experience. And
yeah, but it's like it uses the technology on your camera that where you can take the panoramic, you know.
Yeah.
But it displays it in a way that actually makes sense rather than just being this like tiny little snapshot.
But I wonder
if that
was
cool
the dome
for that image.
Yeah, well, I wonder if that was built by the Elevate people.
It was built by their Vaishnavs.
So now they have the wisdom, right?
So yeah, so they're
in LA.
They're using it. I don't know who. Okay, well, so they have sold it to some huge company. I mean, that's who's paying for it.
Yeah, I think I know exactly who these are. There's a place in LA called the Wisdom, and it's owned by these Vaishnavs. And it's like the immersive experience. That's what they're calling it. It's immersive experience.
Okay.
And so we performed there actually. I did Robot Nature performed in those, and now someone's trying to help us develop that for Robot Nature. And those
are the
domes.
That's why I said that. Okay, great. So that's already.
So they currently have 5 domes right now, all connected to each other. And they've been doing these amazing events, like Pink Floyd events and Android Jones art and these amazing. And they have like a main big dome. And one of those big domes was actually at Burning Man years ago.
Yes.
And it was put on by Elevate. Elevate is a film production, Conscious Films. They're based in Ojai.
Yeah, I've met them.
Yeah, Mickey Willis and all them, really good friends. And so they actually had that original dome, and now that dome is one of the 5 wisdoms. And so when I was at Burning Man years ago, I was performing in the one of the original domes years ago, back in, I think it was 2011. I was just there doing these 8-hour nighttime shamanic dome sets while people just laid on the ground and they had visuals, and I was just doing live looping and singing and chanting and weaving in all sorts of stuff. And now that's one of the 5 domes that wisdom now has acquired. And those are the Hare Krishna or Vaishnavs.
And
I think that must have been probably one of the domes at Buckingham.
Yeah.
It's like the same dome being everywhere.
Yeah, it was so cool. I've never seen video in that, because it was a story. It wasn't just like, you know, like a screensaver kind of thing, but it was a whole movie that they did.
No, it's mind-blowing. Mind-blowing. And like I don't know how to do any of that stuff or make any of that stuff, but if someone's, someone likes music and wants to help us make some visuals that are properly formatted for that particular thing, that's what we're trying to connect with right now. We have some people in mind that we're going to contact that are apparently know how to do that type of technology. Wow. So yeah, that'll be
forward to seeing that.
Yeah, me too. I don't know. I'm like, I'm on the outside of that one. I'm just hoping to facilitate and see what happens. And if it's affordable at this point, then we can just get it done soon. If not, we'll make it happen at some point, because I think that whole immersive experience, it could be a tour. I think it could be something that people do, like, because those domes now, they've advanced this ability to make domes really fast and pop them up. It used to be like takes a day or two to set it up. Now I think they have the ability to pop up a dome like that in 3 hours. And so imagine you go to different cities and pop up a dome and then invite a bunch of people. You could tour that dome. I think there's a friend of mine who mentioned that to me recently. That's the only reason I'm thinking about it, is he's the one who even told me about it. And he was like, they're about to be doing that. And so, all right, let me see if we can get on that tour.
Wow. The immersive experience, robot nature.
Tour. Yeah.
Awesome.
Totally. It's all happening.
Well, I've so enjoyed this conversation and catching up with you, Deepak. Thank you for making time.
And, sure, my pleasure. So where are you living now? You're in Oregon?
I am in Washington currently.
Washington. I knew you were up there somewhere.
Yeah.
Like Seattle? Like, or
basically, but a little bit outside, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Do you know Issaquah?
I do. I haven't been there yet, though.
Yeah, I've got some friends in Issaquah that I've visited a few times. That's the only reason I know. And I remember it being pretty, like, I don't know how, like, it was a half hour or somewhat pretty close to Seattle.
Probably about that. Yeah.
In the middle of the woods. And there's a retreat center up there, like a wellness center. And it was like really cool people.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It's interesting because when I moved up here, so I'm in a new relationship and he lives in Redmond. It's just outside of, but he mentioned when I met him that he was in Seattle. And I guess people just say I'm from Seattle when they're, living around. And so I imagined when, I was understanding it was a suburb, I was imagining it sort of like how there's suburbs of New York, but it feels so much more accessible to go into Seattle than it does to New York for some reason. Maybe it's just bigger out here.
Have you lived in New York?
Well, I lived in a suburb of New York. I lived in Connecticut for a few years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a bad train ride in. I mean, it's still a bit, but I remember the New York days. I love them. I definitely, when I get a second place eventually after these things get larger, it would be in New York for sure. And the third would be London, because those are like just amazing. Oh, okay. Places. I love my New York, love my London, but
Paris. I like Paris.
Paris is fun.
Yeah.
I would want to learn French. Do you know French?
I do. Okay. I grew up in France. Yeah.
Well, there you go. All right. So you're good to go.
Yeah. I'm good for that's
the only reason I wouldn't, me. I'm not ready for Paris. I'm like, well, I need to, it's a place where it's good to know French for sure.
Yeah. It'd be good. You could probably pick it up though.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. But I'm like, that's a bit of a, like,
you
gotta spend time doing that versus London.
That's pretty easy. Yeah.
Yeah, and London's also, like, there's just the Beatles. All my favorite bands are from London. Like, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Radiohead, everyone's from London.
Yeah, it definitely has
England in general.
Good musical energy.
got music juju like crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, how do they do that? Such a tiny country.
Such a tiny country, and like the best music ever. Yeah. Like all electronic music, Paul Oakenfold. I mean, you name it. It was all happening in London, the clubs there back in the 80s. You know, I just remember like looking into the history and going, wow, what a factory for quality music.
Totally.
Some of the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
nice.
And more to come.
What's going on? Are you touring? Are you touring these days? You singing? You out there?
I'm doing more recorded stuff. I do a lot of, I collaborate with this producer in Sweden, and we release a single every few weeks, every few months, something like that.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm really enjoying that because that's what I've always wanted to do, is just record. Love recording. Yep.
Just be an awesome, just a dope recording artist.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like the performing too. But I have the two small kids right now, so it's feeling just really aligned to be, you know, less concerned with the moving around and more with the
Well, the thing with recording too is you record, and then there's a time where you can actually tour the record and just make that a mini tour or something specifically for the record. So you focus on the recording, take your time, and then it's like, all right, time to, you put the record out, and then people start hearing it and they might want to hear those songs live, and then you just get invited to places, and then it doesn't even have to be a tour. It could be a weekend show here and there just around the release of whatever you're recording. So it all connects, you know?
I don't have a band in this area yet, so that is imminent. I had a really great band in Phoenix where I was.
Phoenix, okay. Yeah. Well, if it's called for, it'll come. That's how it goes.
Yeah. I'm about
to disappear like that.
Do you know Johanna Beekman?
That name sounds familiar. I don't know if
I think she started coming to Bhakti Fest after you. But yeah,
I haven't been back there since 2013. I think it was Shakti Fest 2013, maybe, or Bhakti Fest 2012. Sometimes that was the last time I was at that particular fest. Johanna Beekman. I definitely feel like I've heard the name.
Yeah, well, she's from this area, and we're going to be doing the Radical Love Fest, the Seattle Yoga Festival, basically, in a couple weeks. I'm going to sing with her, so I look forward to meeting some of the yoga community here, which will be fun.
Yeah, and you'll probably have she's got a band, then you can just have that band.
Totally. I'm sure that would be fine because she doesn't take them with her. She has a band of the moment.
Yeah, that's exactly. You just for that, whatever that event, you'll have a band.
Yeah. Yeah. Go. So that should be fun. Awesome.
That'll be awesome. Seattle.
Yeah. So if people want to find out more about you, what would be a good place for them to go?
Yeah. I mean, well, specifically Robot Nature. Robot Nature is easy at robotnature.com or Robot Nature Music on Instagram. And then I'm hanging out these days on Instagram at The Other Deepak, or just pretty much anything theotherdeepak.com or Facebook, or just Google The Other Deepak, and all sorts of random things pop up. Chanting pops up, other Disney stuff, it all pops up. So
cool.
Yeah, pretty much either look up Robot Nature or look up The Other Deepak, and you'll find an array of goodness.
Fantastic. All right, well, bye. This was awesome
and amazing.
I'll let you know when it comes out.
So good to catch up, and thanks for hitting me up. It's been a while.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
You too.